Susan and I would like to begin our conversation tonight about feminism and Christianity, and then move as rapidly as we can to a discussion of all of among all of us on that subject. So Susan has some things to say, and I'll say some things, and then we'll hopefully engage many of you in some discussion.
I'm going to begin reading from Matthew. For it will be as when a woman going on a journey calls her servants and entrusts them to her property. To one she gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to her ability. Then she went away. She who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and she made 5 talents more. So also she who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But she who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid her mistress's money. Now after a long time, the mistress of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And she who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Mistress, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I have made 5 talents more. Her mistress said to her, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your mistress. And she also, who had the 2 talents, came forward, saying, Mistress, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here, I have made 2 talents more. Her mistress said to her, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your mistress. She also, who had received the 1 talent, came forward, saying, Mistress, I knew you to be a hard woman, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not winnow. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But her mistress answered her, You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sowed and gather where I have not winnowed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from her, and give it to her who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and she will have abundance. But from her who has not, even what she has will be taken away. It's the parable of the talents. When read in that way, it says to me that as a woman, that if I have been given talents and gifts, and if I use them, there will be more. If I hide them, then I am of very little value. To have talents, to know what one's talents are, to get a sense of what one's gifts are, it's not always easy. When I started my adult life, I started as a teacher. I never thought much about becoming one, but I did, and I was fairly good at it. I liked it, but there was just something that was drawing me to something else. And I was never sure just what that was. But when I was a teacher, I felt like I was respected, felt good about myself. I had a job to do. I was expected to do it. No one questioned whether I could do it because I was a woman. I was responsible for a lot of people's children, young adult children, basically, high school students. Nobody questioned that. I was young, very young, when I look back on it. But it was something that people she was a teacher. I'm a teacher. So therefore, you must know what you're doing. And it's okay. Well, I taught for 5 years, and then I left teaching, sort of accidentally, but I ended up working for the church. And that was when I began to experience the sense that I wasn't as respected, that I wasn't as valued, that I was not given the same kind of, that the same things were not expected of me as a woman in the church as had been a woman in the school system. Many times, what I did is I worked as a youth worker and did some work with Christian education, so it was falling into the same line. Many times people asked me if I was a church secretary, and that is not to put down secretaries, because it's a real gift too, and I'll tell you, I don't have it. I was for a while, and it was really delightful. I typed the bulletin upside down and backwards, constantly made errors because my mind, for me, my mind and my hands don't work at the same speed, and I always had to read everything. I got so involved in what I was reading, when I was typing it, that I didn't pay any attention. I mean, it just wasn't, that isn't the job for me. But that was basically, because I was in the church, what people expected that I ought to be. And it was a real struggle, and a surprise. I also knew that there was more for me than working simply in the area of youth and programming and that kind of thing. And again, teaching. And then that particular position was eliminated so that that particular congregation could call a second pastor. And in that process, I wasn't so much because I was a woman, it was just because, at that point, because I was a layperson, and the pastors had more credibility, perhaps. But whatever, the job ended. And so at that point, I was beginning to think about becoming an ordained pastor. I thought I was too old. So I waited 3 more years. Worked in another setting, under another pastor, in a little different kind of occupation as a community advocate and outreach worker in an inner city parish. There I experienced a little less of that sense that I couldn't do the job that I was commissioned to do at that point. It was at that point I also began to consider the fact that I wanted to be involved in sacramental ministry as well. And so that's what led me to the seminary. And I discovered, while I was at the seminary, working in a parish on my own, with no other pastor around, that that is where my gifts and my talents lay. That all came together for me. And then I received my first call. And my father said, couldn't they find a man? And you know, it's funny in a way, but it hurts. There's a sense that all of my life, he gave me this the sense that I could do anything I wanted to do. Came from a family of four females and four female children and one male child. We did everything. We did the housework, the indoor work, we did the outdoor work. There wasn't anything that girls and women couldn't do. And so that's the way I grew up. That's the way I experienced myself as a teacher. But then when it came to the church, I couldn't do it. You know, couldn't they find a man? And I said, you know, you really haven't been listening for the last few years. He was very proud of me as his daughter, but he couldn't understand a congregation wanting me. It's not an unusual experience, because there are a lot of congregations that ask that very same question. Why a woman? We don't want a woman. Even though she may have all of the gifts and all of the things that we need in this congregation to make it work, we'd rather have a man, because he's a real pastor. And in the parish, I had a wonderful experience. I was the second woman, so I didn't have to go through a lot of the pain that other women go through in their first experience. So I was a pastor. Until, you know, there were still those times during funerals, you know, when people come from out of town, and they'd say, you're as good as any man I've ever heard. Or, I've never heard a woman pastor before. It didn't seem any different. And I share these things because, again, it always surprised me. Why shouldn't I be good at what I do? I'm trained for it. I feel called to it. I don't know why I shouldn't be. So I'm always surprised when people say that to me. People in the parish thought it was a little, they kind of smiled a little bit too, like, because they had gotten used to arguing with me and same kinds of things that go on in parishes, you know. The pastor did this and the pastor did that. And you know, the more positive things that happened, and I've shared this story before, so some of you have heard it, is that whole excitement with children who have no other, I mean, in that particular parish, especially the small ones, never had known anyone but a woman pastor. A pastor who was a woman. And this one woman brought her 3-year-old child to church for the first time, and I just had a permanent. And she turned to her mom and she said, "Mommy, God has curly hair." I was there for 4 years, and she was 7 when I left, and she knew I wasn't God. You know. But the interesting thing was, her image of God was female, and I was it. That was exciting. A boy, about 10 or 11, at an overnight, we're sitting discussing something, said to me, "Do you think that if God were to send another child, this time it would be a girl?" Out of nowhere came this question. I didn't prompt it. I hadn't raised it. I thought it many times, thinking, "I think it's time." But his experience was simply, it made sense. So that there are those positive kinds of things that come have been my experience within the church as a woman, to sort of balance sometimes the negative. But there's a lot of pain. It would be easier for me to be in some kind of position outside of the church than it would be in the church. I had a conversation with a woman who was working on her PhD who said to me she didn't think she could get used to having her pastor be a woman. That was hard to hear. Very professional person. Highly paid, probably. Highly salaried. Who somehow couldn't make the connection between her profession and mine as both being okay for women. Being thought of only for another call, having people say, "I would like you to consider this. Have you considered this particular congregation? They're looking for an assistant." Of not being suggested that I seek a position as a senior pastor in a multi-staff situation, nor that I seek a position as a solo pastor, although that is okay if it's a very small congregation somewhere, which would be fine for me, really. But there's sort of a sense that we are limited in how we understand what a woman can do in the church, which is to say, I think, sometimes different from what it is for a woman to do in other areas and other professions. And so I share this as my contribution tonight to getting the discussion, hopefully discussion started, just coming out of the pain, the frustration, of knowing that I'm called to be something, that I'm called to be a pastor in a setting, because those are the things that God has given me to do, and yet I'm being told, get told every once in a while, that is not a possibility, and I don't understand the difference. I mean, I have a real hard time with that. I struggle with that.
Thank you, Susan. Susan and I were talking about tonight, and I said, I'm real secular in my regular life when I'm not at Holden. I'm a feminist and have been an active feminist in Chicago for 16 years, I guess, or 17 or something. active in feminist organizations and working with a socialist feminist group and doing a lot of different kinds of feminist things, but almost never with Christians, with people who aren't religious at all, people who are Jewish, people who are other things. But my life as a Lutheran and as a Christian in Chicago is has run a sort of separate track, by and large. And it's only recently that it's coming together. But when we were talking about tonight, we realized that our points of view about the church were very similar, that we come at this juncture, me as a sort of secular feminist and she as a Christian feminist, to a real common ground. And the common ground is our frustration with the church. The people that I work with in Chicago are people whose values I am comfortable with and I admire and respect and endorse and aspire to. They're people who, in their family lives and in their work lives and in their jobs and in their work, in the sense of justice issues and working for the poor, for civil rights, for whatever kinds of issues we all have worked on together over the years against the war in the early years, we share all those values, and they're all values that are consonant with being a Christian. They're on the same wavelength as I am as a Christian, although I'm one of the few Christians in our sort of larger circle of activist friends in Chicago. They are people who have done as Jody and I have done, shared a job between us and shared child rearing at home and care of the home of the, our house at home. They are, or at least they're people who understand our desire to live on less money and take more time for our family and to share work and to share child rearing. They're people who understand that all of us in our society and among our friends in particular are capable of people who are capable of not only washing our socks and keeping our cars repaired. Each of us individually can do that, but also we're all vulnerable, and we all have grieved together over the death of a friend, and we have all rejoiced together over the birth of a new child into the community. They're people who, with whom I share deep values and deep love, the kind of thing that I associate with a Christian community. So then I think, why aren't I finding that community among Christians in Chicago? Every time I start off, and over the last 20 years, into a new church setting, I come back out. I quit. I can't stand it. I find it to shut me down. I walk in, I listen, I discuss, I make friends, I try to understand what's going on there, because I need a church. And in fact, we have a house church that meets in our homes of Lutherans, and that is fine, and that's never been a problem for me. But the regular sort of churches that you pass on the street that are Lutherans, which is by and large where I tend to go, because I'm a Lutheran, I want that church for me. I want it because I need it to help me with my personal problems. I need it to help me understand the difficult issues of our day. I want an ethical, strong, clear Christian voice to help me understand my use of money, to help me understand or grapple with my experience with death, to help me understand and grapple with my community's need to deal with questions like abortion. Ours is a complex time, and I need a strong Christian voice to help me in my life. So I go back to a church again. I try again. I want church for affirmation. I want it for community. I want it because of all places in the world, I think the church ought to be where I'm accepted as a whole person, where I'm complete, where there's no part of me that has to be left at the door. I want the church to say, you are affirmed as a complete human being. We don't have to limit you in any way. because God accepts you, God has made you, you are a whole person. So I keep trying, and I keep going back to the institutional church. I also think that I should change the institutional church. I think I should make the church the Lutheran church, because that's my heritage, more responsive to justice issues, and I feel that, you know, stuff like that. So I go to church and I get mad, I get angry, I feel patronized by the language that I hear there, by the stories, by the kinds of activities that are expected of me. I feel diminished by my experience in church. I feel as though I'm not a full person there. I feel like women are the images that are provided for how it's appropriate for a woman to behave or be in a church are by and large not fulfilling. They're not satisfying. The images are male. The power structure is male. I just have a problem with it, and I don't like it that I have that problem. I don't want to have that problem. So I leave my brush with church because it's bad for me, because it's clearly bad for me, because it makes me feel less confident, it makes me feel less efficacious in the world, it makes me feel less of a person, it makes me feel less whole. And I don't want that for my church. So that's the dilemma that I have. I'm working on it and I'm struggling with it, but that's my experience with several, many different Lutheran churches. And on that note, I would like to know what other people are thinking and feeling and experiencing. I've heard Elmer Witt say before about these sessions that these should be sessions where people speak from their gut, where they say what they feel, not what they think. And I guess I think at least some combination of feeling and thinking would be a good thing tonight. And I'm hoping that the experiences that you've all been having this week, as we've had presentations from a wide variety of kinds of people, have been fermenting in your minds, and there are things you'd like to bring out on this issue.
I have a question. You had said you go to several different churches and become frustrated because you don't feel like you're accepted as a complete person. How do you perceive the other women in that church? Were you there long enough to get a handle on that? Or what is their level of acceptance or regard?
In other words, am I being singled out?
Or whether you feel like you're being singled out.
No, I don't feel like I'm being singled out.
Or not.
I think it's something that happens about, I think it happens in the church about women. I hear some mm-hmms in here.
One thought I had is that Susan spoke as I came from a similar background and went through a similar evolution, being a teacher and then going on to other things. And I found, too, that my sense of, not necessarily the church, but as a whole, the less that we are involved in the traditional activities like teaching, the more we're confronted by the fact that we're less of a person than a man who has similar skills and responsibilities. And something just struck me about a way that I am insulted, and I never realized this till just this very moment. But for instance, in our church, one of the expectations is that every woman is a member of ALCW. And they publish this list, and it comes out, and it has everybody's name by month, and who's supposed to bring cookies and do things that month. There's no list like that for men. And I've never done one thing when my name came up on that list out of just silent rebellion, I guess, because I am insulted by that. But it never really struck me till right now. But I think that the higher we move up, and now I'm in an administrative position, the more we find subtle forms of discrimination that are almost worse as a blatant ones that keep us in our place.
Oh, just another little example. About every other month, they call my husband to be usher at church, and he says, fine, we'll be glad to. And they say, well, only men. And he said, well, when we both can I will.
Do I belong to a really strange church? We've had president of the congregation that have been women on the church council for years. Whatever needs to be done, whoever wants to do it or is most qualified does it. I thought all Lutheran churches were like that. I guess not.
But there's still subtle things. I mean, my church this year, our church council has one man on it. It's, you know, the president's a woman and 11 of the 12 church council members are women. But it's still the women that have to wash the communion glasses. You never see a man in there washing communion glasses.
Has anyone ever asked a man to do it?
But they always ask women.
Yeah, don't you think they know how?
They act like they know. I think sometimes humor is fun, but it'd probably be better if we made those I statements or feeling statements.
I just completed serving on a call committee for our church, and we called an associate pastor. And in the process, after, well, many meetings, and almost at every meeting, it was brought up, should we consider a lady to fill this position? And in the process, it was thoroughly discussed. And I'm sure that every church is different, but we came to the conclusion, and not that there was anything wrong with a lady pastor, but we felt our church was not ready for it. We are a Swedish community, and they came up with the overall idea, especially if anyone would question us about it, that we perhaps might call, just to get people kind of used to it, we'd call a seminarian lady, and we'd see if they, how they got along with that idea. But they really felt that they were not ready for it. And in the discussion, some of the people, and there were men and women on our call committee, and they felt that it goes way, way back. And the thing is that we are changing, because as you will remember, years ago, it was always the father in the family, the one who made the money, he was looked up to, and it comes to that. You know, that's way, way back, and things have changed now, but we have not changed with it. That is the problem, see? But I think in time, things will change. But maybe people don't want to wait for that.
I'm curious what it is they're not, they said they were not ready. What would it take to get them ready? What are they waiting for to be ready?
Well, you see, they just feel that the congregation would not, at this time, accept a woman because they just felt that it always had been for us and so on. But I think in time, and I think the procedure will be to call a lady seminarian. We will be using a seminarian every year.
Do any of the rest of you share the feeling that I have that that our church should take leadership in this area, as in many areas, that in fact we should turn to the church for models and for strength and progressiveness and leadership? I'm always surprised that my secular community is in such a different place on this issue than my religious community. Does that, don't we expect that of the church?
A church campaign issue.
people are people and they should all be treated equally in regards to their talents, but I think you also have to give them time to get used to you a little bit too. That's what's kind of what I was getting at before, you know, but...
I always wear a dress to church and try to look as nice as I can, so I mean, I shouldn't...
Well...
I try not to be outrageous there.
I think rather than make a campaign issue, just get in and start working, volunteer your help, and...
Wash those glasses.
And work your way into a deep position, you know. Show them what you can do.
Well, some of my thoughts are like his. We Lutherans are kind of a stodgy middle class group, and we take a while to warm up. We have to give each other room for that time, and then gradually work in. And I get the impression that you have gifts, that you're somewhat of avant-garde, and these others need that, and they need you. It isn't so much what you want, but they need you, and if you give your gifts to them, you'll find you have a place, and you'll be busier than you ever know.
Are you talking to me?
No, I think she's talking to me.
Can I say something? I think what bothers me at times is that I do see that the church waits until secular society has made an issue of something and then we adopt it as our own. We call it liberation of oppressed peoples. I think what happens is we label ourselves as stodgy or Norwegian or Swedish, and then we, it's self-fulfilling prophecy, we don't change because that's what we expect ourselves not to do. I think as Christians we have to accept that call that Christ gives us to be radical in changing this world. I don't think we need to give people time. Jesus didn't give people time. He said this is how it is.
How much time do we need? How long, you know, how many years has it been since the first woman was ordained?
15.
That's a certain amount of time.
And going into other careers, how much do you see of that?
I'm beginning to see a lot of that. A couple of friends in the last year who have waited 2 years for a first call and just quit, given up. They've been interviewed, turned down, sometimes not even interviewed because the congregation will consider, I don't know. It's happening a lot. And I also read where many are now awaiting call or resigned without call because of the frustration. It's a painful time.
I'm a Missouri Lutheran. Of course, we don't have women pastor, but we, for instance, myself, I go out on evangelism calls with my husband, and they allow, so to speak, women to do that. And to me, that's quite important. Mm-hmm. And women are workers in our church in California.
Just as a sidelight, I've heard that the Missouri Synod in California is a little bit more able to do things that the rest of them don't.
Well, I have a Missouri.
I just heard that last week from somebody who was here. That's all.
Are they here?
No, they're not here now. They were. They just.
My background is Missouri Synod too, but you say they're workers, but why can't they be pastors? I've really struggled with that in the Missouri Synod. I don't go along with that.
I don't either, but then I'm.
You're working from the inside.
I'm working them.
I can see it in your eyes.
Bruce has.
Well, people are talking about the church taking a leadership role in changing things. But I don't think that's appropriate. What you're trying to do is change the church. The conflict I see is between members of the church. It's being accepted by people in the church. So, I mean, we can sit here and be, I think, fairly unanimous with maybe a few exceptions that women ought to be given equal standing in the church, but that is not the consensus of the Lutheran church in any of the synods that I know anything about, which certainly I don't know much, but I mean, it sounds like the resistance is coming from within the church. And so until you can convince people within the structure that they want to change, the church can't so much take a leadership role. People like you have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it seems to me that it's very much like he's saying, that the congregation is saying, well, it's not us.
we like you, you know, you're a woman, we think you're great, but it's not us, it's the church. It's because the Norwegians, or it's the Swedes, or it's the church. And the church is saying, oh, it's not us, it's the individual congregations. They're not accepting you. Now, where's the
church? The church is people.
The church is people. The church. The church is people, but it's like people are saying, you know, not me, I'm not going to be the first one. And so they're blaming it on, quote, the church, and saying, well, it's not us. And as an organization, saying, well, like he's saying, well, it's really, it's just the individual people in the church. And each one's just passing it off. Like, no one wants to take a position on it.
Mm-hmm. In the first parish I served, there was a Methodist who was a trainer of managers. And I asked him if he ever used the knowledge that he did in his job in his congregation. And he said, no. He said, my congregation is where everybody wants to feel good and nothing gets done. And that's always kind of haunted me, that David couldn't use a managerial grid assessment method for leadership training with a parish council that he used in his job. And I think, change is costly. And I've been involved in a lot of pain over bringing about change in the church. And I think it's costly economically. And there are a lot of people who cover their rears, because when people say, hey, if you do that, I'm going to leave, and they're talking about 10 or 15 or 20 families and maybe $20,000 or $30,000 leaving in a year, that brings up a lot of parish leaders short. And I see even pastors waffle. You know, maybe that's my paycheck that's involved. Or we can't afford this. You know, we need to wait. So I think part of the resistance is economical. And no one's mentioned that, but that's something that I see. The people are afraid they'll lose money. And I guess faithfulness has to somehow be put alongside economics, for me at least.
Yes.
In Scripture, Christ was at the vanguard. He was the one who initiated change, the one who was not afraid of healing the sick on his Sabbath, of doing things that were compassionate and merciful. And after 40 years of being in an institutional church, I have left and have joined a small church of 80 people that in the last 5 years has grown to 3,000. And from that body of people have come six pastors. Two of them are women. Neither of them have a degree. Both are gifted. And their gifts have been utilized. One started as an inner healing gift. And she now works with a woman, about 100 alcoholics, one night a week, and with their families. And these gifts have flourished. And because the people who have been drawn to that fellowship lack the fear, they're not afraid of trying something new. Others are attracted to this fellowship because their hurts are being met, and the compassion is there. And people, my customers that I brought to the church, have told me they can feel this as they come in the door. I think it's sad that secular magazines have chastised the church in the issue of segregation and prejudice, and said that the church was not at the vanguard in changing these issues, but we were at the end of it. And the responsibility that the church gave back to this secular magazine was that these are personal issues. How can we worship next to someone that we don't like? I feel the same way in this issue. I fear for the church because they're losing valuable leaders, people who are gifted. And it will mean eventually that they will be drawn to the church and utilized in another way. And I fear that.
I wasn't here at the beginning, but I wondered if you envisioned for us what it could be like, say, tomorrow or next year or 5 years down the road, or when women pastors are 80, what do you see as a good picture.
Well, I think we talked some about women in leadership positions like bishops and head pastors, and also use of inclusive language in a way that we feel included. Nothing else specific comes to mind.
I have personal visions about that, but I'm not so sure. Maybe I'd be willing to share that in a different kind of setting. Well, sure. I don't want to be so totally in terms of the direction of this thing, but my vision would be that there wouldn't be needs for bishops and senior pastors and situations like that. That there could be a time when the power gets shared and shifted with the needs that present themselves at any particular moment. That the gifts that we all come together with, that it just gets passed around. That sometimes I'm in charge and sometimes, he gets in charge or whatever, depending on what needs to be done. But that's sort of a circular thing, more than a hierarchical thing. I would like to envision the church as no longer being based on a hierarchical model. That would be my vision of it.
I'm a teacher, and if you take the profession, the majority of teachers are probably women. And it's astounded me that the majority of administrators in education are male. I think you said two real important words, bishop and power. And what I like, we talked about congregations and fear and fear of change, and he talked about economics. I think the one thing that hasn't been touched on is power. And I know that congregations are free to call everybody, but the central office gives people names. Do you feel that the power structure of the church is really helping women to get called? How do you feel about that? And I know that's not a nice question, but I think it's an issue that needs to be talked about.
Lawyer of the Methodist.
I speak obviously neither as a Spaniard, and less obviously I'm not a Lutheran either. And maybe out of the fact that I'm a Methodist gives me an experience to speak a little bit about what bishops do and powers do. And within the Methodist Church, the bishops are a big help to women working for church. Susan, our daughter Elaine. Yes. And she came out of seminary, and she knew she was going to have an assignment. She was assigned, sure, in a small church, but no smaller than the one her brother had been assigned to a few years before when he came out of seminary. And she went to a church that had never had a woman pastor before. And it wouldn't be fair to say that within the Methodist Church, a local congregation has no voice in who's assigned, any more than it would be fair to say that the pastor has no voice. But the bishop has the final word with the help of his cabinet. And she and a number of other women have been assigned to local churches that certainly wouldn't have selected her if they'd been out looking for her. And we talked about whether the people need to accept them, whether it's a church decision. To a large extent within the Methodist Church, it is the church that assigns the woman to the congregation. And she's only within the Northwest Conference, which is basically Washington and a little part of Idaho. There are quite a few women pastors. Some of them are associates, a number of them are not. And I don't know if these congregations are really ready for women. Elaine's been there, 4 years now? And they haven't fallen apart. Becca Parker's been in her church for a number of years. A number of others that we know have been several years in their congregations, and most of them were first women in their congregations. And bills are paid.
I'd like to comment a little bit, though, on how to make that happen. It's really different in the United Methodist system because the bishop appoints you, and if the church doesn't like it, the membership can leave. But the bishop appointed the best. And it's radically different in the Lutheran kind of setting. But I really think that this group of people has the power to change that drastically. I know a Methodist bishop that said while he was bishop of West Ohio, there wouldn't be a woman ordained there. And the laity in the annual conference got so mad at that, they said, he's wrong. And they had to shuffle some women candidates for ordination from one district to another and stack the deck and put together nominating committees composed of the right people to get the right things done. But Bishop Inslee ordained a woman, and we all cheered. She died shortly thereafter. But the church is like a freight train trying to get started, you know, and one car gets moving and jerks against another one, runs into another one. It's the coordination is awkward. But I just think you really have to keep the pressure on. In our conference, we decided a few years ago we were going to double the number of ethnic pastors and ethnic churches in the conference in a 5-year period of time. And people voted for it thinking it was silly, you know, it was a nice token thing to do, but it didn't happen. And all of a sudden, at the end of the 5-year period of time, we had doubled the number of ethnic pastors, and we were well on our way to doubling the number of ethnic churches. And I think that if this group of people decided we're going to get women ordained in the Senate church.
I'd like to share some results of major changes taking place in the church. There are people who get into a position of control or power and feel like that they can direct the direction of the church, and it makes it quite difficult for anybody else to participate or to add their 2 cents worth. And when a change takes place that they object to and then they can't change and they do leave, it's been my reflection that it opens the way for other people to participate. It opens them up, it frees them, lets them loose. And it makes them proud of their church a little more and actually wind up growing.
I just want to throw out a possibility. If, as members of congregations, and you were in the call process, would you accept a dossier or a resume or whatever with no name, no age, no sex, no race, just to look at just the basic information that you need as a congregation to decide what your needs are for a pastor?
Anyway, my first question would be,
no pictures. I mean, so that there is no sense. You don't know how old the person is. You don't know what sex the person is. You don't know what race the person is. You don't know what the person's physical characteristics are. Could you accept that?
In the district, is the person a feminist? Is the person going to preach feminism?
You won't know that. You will only know what that person's skills are, experiences.
Whatever. I don't know your name. This lady with the blue square. She's so beautiful. She just her wisdom is so fine. This is a woman that I really respect. She doesn't talk about the battle that's going on. She talks about the character of the person coming in. I happen to have gone to the church that had a woman pastor. And all the sermons were on feminist issues. And the ministers didn't talk about power issues. I would love to go to a church, regardless of whether the pastor is a man or a woman, if the church is dealing with all issues.
Well, that would certainly be the expectation for a pastor.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we should be surprised that
it's been a tough goal for the women that are becoming pastors. It's been tough for women who start any new, you know, like the first woman doctors, the first this and that. And I think, in my experience, I have known quite a few. Now, I realize 15 years is kind of long to go through the birth pains, but I have known some of the first women pastors that come out, and it seemed as though they had a real big chip on their shoulder. And in order to be the first ones, they had to be a certain aggressive type person, and I found them to be quite unlikable. And I think that has to finally ease off, and then people who are genuine follow. And I think a lot of congregations have been very scared by the first ones that have come out. And I think it just really does have to take time.
I don't think we would have all the black professional athletes we have today if Jackie Robinson had talked about race all the time. That poor man, he got spit on, he got bottles thrown at him, he had everything. But he broke the line, but he did it because he was one damn good baseball player. And people had to respect him for the way he played the game. And the line is broken.
So are you saying that women pastors have to be really outstanding to make it?
No, they
men
just
can
have
be mediocre.
To be really
women.
Good.
But I think they have to be in it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So should men.
True.
All true.
See, I don't even want it to be debated. I don't want there to be a question about if there should be a woman pastor. I'm a woman, and I can do it. I mean, I can do any job that I set my mind to. Why should I have to have a group of people decide whether or not I'm okay to be a pastor because of my genitals?
But don't whine about it. Get out there and do it.
Ingrid?
Just don't want to be a pastor.
You, Bruce? You spent, I forget the figure you named, 15, 17 years as a social activist fighting for social change in various areas. And yet it sounds like you don't want to do that at church. You want to go to church and be accepted,
mm-hmm.
have everything, you know, be just hunky-dory. I don't see why you should expect that to be. Churches are not composed of social activists, of like-minded people. They're composed of a cross-section of America, I think. If you want to change, you have to go there as a social activist, and you've got to work for that change. That may not be why you want to go to church now, but you're not going to find the church that you want unless somebody does that.
That's a good point. It's certainly the case that I have higher expectations for fellow Christians. Sister Christians than I do for the secular world.
Plus you get tired of fighting and you'd like some place where
yeah.
you could just go be yourself.
There's
something. Again, with regard to women pastors, of course Missouri don't have them, but to me, if the women preach the law and the gospel as like the men pastors do, I don't know why they can't be accepted. I mean, that's what we hear, the law and the gospel.
We're all told to pick up our cross, not
so,
just half of us, and follow him, follow Jesus. Yeah, it seems to be moving. You haven't talked before, haven't you?
What's the percentage of women within all Christian churches?
Who are what? Clergy?
Who are,
just,
yeah,
in
who
general?
Are involved in the clergy?
I have no idea. Does anybody know?
Well, the reason I ask is I happen to be a Catholic. I'm in the Catholic Church. I mean, you feel that you have a struggle where you are. Our priests are talking about, the church is talking about the fact that vocations are so low that we're going to have to reorganize the church and that there's going to have to be a much stronger lay ministry but there's no talk of allowing women into the clergy.
Except among some of the sisters.
Oh, that's very true, but amongst the people in power.
Yeah. But there are, but my Catholic friends in Chicago, Chicago's a very Catholic town, and my Catholic friends there, who most of whom went through Catholic schools as children and teens, have wonderful memories of some wonderful nuns that were their teachers and role models and who were really terrific people for them to have been exposed to through the years. So, I mean, I understand your point completely, but they're...
But the nuns have a role. They stay within that. They don't step above it.
Well, some do.
Well, that's true, but they're not terribly... I mean, they're not looked upon and accepted well within the church. I must say, though, in the last 15 years, there's been a lot of change post John, well, you know, John the 23rd, and the way we made changes were that we, as a congregation, did what we wanted to do, and got a lot of flack from our bishop, and we moved from a parish that we couldn't handle the structure to a parish that was willing to take those chances. And some of what I know as the church today is a result of what we did 15 years ago of breaking rules and pushing ahead and making people, you know, very upset. But you're far ahead of us as far as women go.
I'd like to ask, from a congregation, do you get as much assistance from women as from men in the congregation to a woman pastor?
Yeah. That's
surprising, isn't it?
That surprising that I would get as much resistance from women as from men? No. In fact, I suspect that sometimes we get more resistance from women than from men. It doesn't surprise me. I'm not sure I have the reasons behind that, but it's a part of the struggle for women who maybe wanted to be something else other than what they are, and find in another woman who has done that kind of scary for them. Mm-hmm. Not always is that the case, but I think that's a part of it. We have about 2 minutes or a minute left before 10 o'clock. 5 minutes? 5 minutes, too? I think, do you have a question?
Okay.
She has a question.
Okay. All right, yeah. I guess my question is, I noticed the other day when you asked for the missionaries who had gone out into the world to stand up, and there was only one man and all the rest women who stood up. And so it seems extremely acceptable to have women missionaries and send them out into the world as pastors and missionaries and establish churches. And why doesn't that translate back, and it's more of a philosophical question, why doesn't that translate back to home? Why, you know, where is the switch that takes place? And I'll ask everyone here in their own mind, where is that switch that occurs, and when and why?
It's a good question.
No, not officially pastors, but they're serving in that role.
It's taken us 2,000 years almost to come to the point where St. Paul says, in Christ there is no male nor female.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a long time. I think we're an exciting time where this transition is coming about. And the women started it. Give us credit, men. And then what it's going to be, we don't know.
Well, I'd like to make one comment about something I'm uncomfortable with when we've been talking about becoming involved in a congregation. I don't just go to church to have my needs met. I want to be part of the fellowship and be accepted by fellow Christians, but there are things that transcend that concern, such as going to hear the word preached and spoken, to be baptized, to share in the Lord's Supper, and things like that. And I intend to be there in the congregation to change the things that I feel, you know, we need to work on, but there are things that are more important to me than just having my needs met by fellow members of the congregation that are important for me to continue as a part of a worshiping
body. Any questions?
I was reading a book by, I think,
Horner and called Faith and Experience, and this was a really important thing for me. He said, faith is always tied to our experience, of course. And the problem is that for hundreds and hundreds of years, theology has been done and scriptures interpreted by white middle class males, which is what I am. And that was really been an important thing for me. That said, that feminist theology in this is important, not only, at least for me, not only for feminism's sake, but that's also a point of entry into the other part of that thing, middle class, you know, or other, and other cultures, because, you know, I have a mother and a daughter and a wife and friends, so that all that is close, and when I can get into that, I can also move into some of those other kinds of justice issues. Mm-hmm. Better, right?
That's a good point.
That's a bottom line for
me. Well, thank you all for your participation. I'm afraid it's time for us to
have a few struggles, life wouldn't be worth living, would it?
Right. I have a wonderful Tanzanian missionary story that I have to share with you, since I have an audience. Yesterday, we rode the bus down with the Tanzanian missionaries who were in the village this past week. And at the point where the bus stops and it shifts into low gear and we start down the switchbacks, I don't know about the rest of you, but my heart always sort of goes at that point. Well, these ladies looked around at each other and said, let's sing, and they named one of their African hymns, and they sang their hymns. And it was like, nearer my God to me, I felt comfort.